You're listening to the Morning Brew with Stu Podcast, and here's your host, Stuart Brooking.
And here we go. Welcome to the Morning Brew with Stu. As always, I'm your host, Stuart Brooking. It's Super Bowl week by the time you're listening to this, and I thought no better way to honor the Super Bowl than to look at the last time my Colts won the Super Bowl. Not the last time they were in it. The last time they were in it was pretty heartbreaking, but the last time that they won it, and that was the 2006 Super Bowl against the Chicago Bears. And I thought no better way, or nobody I'd rather have to come and run through this game than my resident Colts fan as well of the podcast, the one, the only Jay Stevens. Jay, welcome back, my guy. And what a game to kind of go back and look at.
Oh, my gosh, Duke. I'm happy to be back on the show. And, man, watching this game, the players that were on the field, the rain on the field, it rained more than I remembered it raining in that game. Peyton Manning, Dominic Rhodes brought back so many memories, and I'm glad the Colts won this game, because you talk about that game against the Saints being heartbreaking. You lose to Rex Grossman in the Super Bowl, that'd be embarrassing.
Hey, Bloomington South alum, by the way.
Facts.
But, all right, so let's start off with – we're going to go through kind of the storylines leading up to the game that were storylines at that point that bring you into the game and kind of how the things were going and why certain moments in this game were so important because of storylines that led up to it. So let's start off with the storylines behind the game. I think the biggest storyline leading up to the game was the fact that no matter who won the Super Bowl, whether it was the Indianapolis Colts or the Chicago Bears, you were going to have the first African-American coach to ever win a Super Bowl. And it wound up being Tony Dungy, but and I don't think another one's won it since. Maybe I'm wrong. I can't think off the top of my head that anybody has. But Tony Dungy or Lovie Smith were going to be the first African-American coaches to ever win a Super Bowl. And you talk about history. There, in a game that had so much – for the players' legacies, this was something that was a history-making moment for the league.
Dude, it's one of those moments when you look back at it, even going into this game, and I remember the buildup. As you say this, I remember there were shows on the radio, on TV, talking about this very topic and this very reality that history would be made down there in Miami, Florida. I didn't really understand the significance of it back then, because I don't think culturally it really hit like it does now. But, dude, that was huge, man. That was a huge, huge moment to have two black guys coaching on opposite sides, head football coaches, guys that have been in the NFL for a long, long time and had worked and grinded and worked and grinded for just to get to this moment, not even to win the game, before the game, but just to get there. That was huge, man. And ultimately, Tony Dungy was the one that won the game. And that just speaks volumes about him, because I rarely hear somebody speak anything bad about either one of these two guys. Before, to be Tony Dungy, I've heard former players that played under him say, there's no better man than Tony Dungy. Never met him personally, but I'm glad he was the first African-American to win the Super Bowl. Head coach, that is.
And to kind of think about so much, because we hear about it with guys like Bill Belichick, we hear about how much this game has taken from people. And for a guy like Tony Dungy, who lost his son, and to be able to, I think it might have been that season or the season before, who lost his son, but yet to be able to stay focused and still stay in there and still have a drive to want to win a Super Bowl, I think that storyline as well kind of was something that kind of resonated with Colts fans at that point in time in Colts history.
Dude, man, think about that type of tragedy that's going on, and it's weighing on you, it's heavy on you. You still have to prepare for this moment. You still have to keep your mind right. You still have to try to block out all of the abnormal thoughts that are in your head to allow you to be the coach and the leader that your team needs you to be. That's tough, man. That is so, so tough to do. And for him to do it and to do it well and to still rally the team in an abnormal Super Bowl in the way that he did, that's a really good accomplishment.
And we kind of talked about this, I think. We kind of talked about this a little bit now. We're going to focus more on, like, some of the players and storylines leading into that. This was a Colts team, Jay, that was considered at this point in time a dome team. They hadn't there's not many people who believe they could win in inclement weather, whether that be snow or rain or whatever. And leading up to that game in Miami, it was supposed to downpour. It wound up downpouring, raining a lot more, like you said, than we remember. There was a lot on the line here for the Colts and the legacy for a guy like Peyton Manning, who at this point was in the same breath as Dan Marino as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time who couldn't get the job done. He finally got over his arch nemesis, but the question around him was, could he do this? But not only could he do this and win the Super Bowl, but could he do it in a torrential downpour like we saw in Miami?
Dude, I've never seen a Super Bowl rain that much. Maybe the first time. I don't say it was the first time it's ever rained in the Super Bowl, but man, it was pouring. Now, at the beginning of the game, it wasn't like the downpour that it was towards the middle of it. But I'm sitting here like, man, I literally had this thought while I was rewatching this game, Stu, talking about Peyton Manning, the guy who was an inside quarterback, a dome kind of guy, found a way in this game to lead the team. I will still, we'll get more into Peyton Manning's game later on, I'm sure. I still remember that game, and my thoughts then are the same thoughts now about how Peyton Manning played, but his leadership was huge and was key, and even changing some things offensively that helped the Buckeyes, wow, another pod, that helped the Colts win the game. I talked so much Ohio State, this Buckeyes rolls off the tongue. I need to get more Colts content coming my way.
All right, let's go more into the game now. So we start the game off with the very first play, Jay, and this, if you remember watching, you hear Jim Nantz talk about it. This is a Colts team that in that season had struggled on kickoff return, and in the words of a guy that we are very good fans of, I guess, and Bill Rafferty, the onions that Tony Dungy had to say, you know what, we're going to start the game off by kicking to Devin Hester. And then they kick it to Devin Hester, and he takes it to the house. We've seen this before, Jay, especially years later, where the first play of a game can define how a Super Bowl wins. I mean, you think about years later, the Seahawks-Broncos game, that ball goes over Peyton's head, and it's pretty much over from that point on. The Seahawks go on to win. Something very similar could have happened after that very first play, but what a call by Tony Dungy to say, we're not scared of Devin Hester, and we're going to kick right at him.
Basically untouched, man. He was he's one of those guys that we think about a return man as Devin Hester. There's two guys that I think about that are elite return men, and mainly that's all they're known for. That's Devin Hester and that's Dante Hall of the Chiefs. That's what they were. They were just literally human joysticks, and they did crazy things. They're both crazy, super fast. But Devin Hester had the ability to get the ball, accelerate quickly, be a little shifty. But when he put his foot in the ground and he went, you couldn't stop him. Up that sideline at the end, Matt Giordano, number 43, probably ran a 4.3 40 on that play to come down and tackle. Well, tried to tackle him into the end zone. Hester got that touchdown. But that was huge, man. Think about a Bears team where you're going up against this Colts offense that has the weapons that they have. And all of a sudden, you're the first one to score in this game, in the Super Bowl, because number 23 got loose on the first play of the game. That's huge, man. That's a great way to start that game for them.
It sure was. So then they obviously get the extra point. It's 7-0. They kick it off to the Indianapolis Colts, and the Colts are marching. And what happens? Peyton goes deep to the right side of the field to Marvin Harrison, and Chris Harris picks it off. And all of a sudden, if you go back, even rewatching this game, Jay, you kind of felt, at least I did, I know how it ended, and I know the Colts wound up winning, but even watching this, you're like, man, the wheels are about to come off here for the Colts. This is a vaunted defense. This isn't the Bears that we know today. This is the Brian Urlacher, Lance Briggs, Peanut Tillman-led defense, and man, oh man, Jay, you see that pick from Chris Harris, and you think, oh man, the wheels are about to come off.
Dude, you talk about the emotions that you feel as you rewatch it. That happened to me too. I'm sitting here literally on that first play. I remember rewinding the kickoff return by Hester because I wanted to watch it again. Like, I understand what happened. I've seen it before, but I wanted to see it again just because it was just so much fun to watch and to see him do that thing there. But do the interception, man, I'm like, oh gosh. Like, literally in the moment, rewatching it, I'm thinking, man, that was not good. I didn't remember that part of the game. There was a lot that I rewatched that I did not remember because this was a long time ago, and I don't normally rewatch this game specifically when it comes to old Super Bowls that I want to rewatch and watch again. But dude, that was bad, man. I mean, Peyton Manning threw that ball. I think he had thrown 7 interceptions in the playoffs, I think, up until that point going into that game. So I'm like, Peyton struggled in the playoffs. Went up against some really good defenses, won those contests. But here we go again. Peyton Manning going to have to overcome his interception woes in the postseason to win another game in the playoffs. And that's exactly what happened. But, man, that was a bad throw and a horrible way to start the game if you're the Colts offense.
Yeah, it sure was. But lucky for them, the defense held. The Bears went 3-and-out to get the ball back. And what happens? The Colts are marching. And Peyton says, you know what? I may have thrown a pick, but the pocket's collapsing. I'm going to step up here on this play. I believe it's third down. And I'm going to go deep down the field to Reggie Wayne. Wayne happens to get behind the defenders, scores a touchdown, and we knock the game up at 7 there with the Indianapolis Colts. Very reminiscent of what his brother would do a year later, where he kind of escapes the pocket and throws it deep to David Tyree. Yeah. He escapes it, sees a man coming down on his face, and throws it anyways, and throws a dot right to Reggie Wayne, who scores, who played football at the University of Miami, scores in a town that he's very familiar with, and knots it up at 7.
You know, I want to correct you there, not just because I remember, I believe this was the one time that the snap was botched on the extra point. And I want to say Hunter Smith, the former punter, which brings back so many memories, he ended up, I want to say this is the time.
6-7, wasn't it?
Yeah, 6-7, 6-7. But, dude, you're right. And I knew Reggie Wayne was wide open going into the game when he caught the touchdown pass. Didn't realize how wide open he was. You could literally see the rain on his jersey, on his arms, as he's running into the end zone, does his celebration. But kudos to Peyton Manning. In that moment, a guy draped all over you, your body is twisted, and you still find a way to sling, basically slingshots, what it looked like, that ball to a wide-open Reggie Wayne because it realized the safety came down, left didn't stay back in the cover two, and next thing you know, bam, wide-open touchdown. Peyton Manning didn't fall on that either. And when they replayed that, I'm like, okay, Chris is his son. Okay, Phil Simms, show me what happened because the replay came, I think, a few minutes later in the gameplay. He didn't fall. Like, Peyton Manning is not, like, the guy that's always breaking tackles, but he is a big, sturdy quarterback, and he didn't fall in that play, which ultimately resulted in the Colts' first touchdown of the game and Peyton Manning's first Super Bowl touchdown, too.
Yeah, for sure. And what, honestly, I think wound up being his only touchdown of the game, if I can remember correct. Let's kind of talk about that for a minute before we get into the rest of the game. Not a great game by Peyton Manning in all likelihood, you know, when you go back and you look at it. I mean, he had an okay game, but not the best Peyton Manning game that we've seen for a guy who fought so hard to get here. Now, it did rain and all that kind of stuff, so there is that. But honestly, I think he had a better New Orleans Saints Super Bowl than he did a Super Bowl 41.
Oh, I agree with you, Stu. I remember after the game, when they handed down the MVP, I was thinking that he doesn't deserve this. It should not have gone to him. And that may come up later on. But in this game, even the numbers, I was like, whoa, this isn't what I remember. 25 of 38, 247 passing yards, one touchdown, one INT, getting a little ahead. Only sacked once in this game. A QBR of 69.0, a passer rating of 81.8. It wasn't the best Peyton Manning game at all. Honestly, if it wasn't for Joseph Addai being a factor in the receiving game, it really wouldn't have been that great of a game for him at all. And 247 passing yards, you may say, Jay, that was pretty good against that Bears defense and in the rain. Okay, oh, it's good. But he didn't look like the Peyton Manning we had known, we had seen. And even in that year, this wasn't the best Colts offense that Peyton Manning's had. Even the best Colts team that Peyton Manning had, I think it was the 05 team or 04 team, whichever one played.
The year before with the Steelers, you could say it was a better team.
I agree. That's the one. That was a better team. But, man, Peyton Manning wasn't the best, but he found a way in that moment to throw that touchdown pass.
Yeah, so then we fast forward past the touchdown pass, and I believe it's the kickoff. The Bears get it, and they fumble it
on
the
my kickoff gosh.
Return. And so the Colts land on it. They get it. They come out with it. The Colts have it. And I think this is the first time we thought the rain was a factor in the game was the Bears fumble here off the kickoff, which, by the way, was a squib kick because mm-hmm. the Colts learned their lesson after kicking the ball to Devin Hester on the first play of the game.
Dude, that rain. And if people are listening to this and are trying to figure out how rainy it was in a Super Bowl, because we don't normally see that, Google it, find it, watch it. You'll see the rain was a major factor. But also, you mentioned the squib kick. That was huge because you don't want to go back and be very aggressive, kick it deep again, and then, bam, 7-6 goes to 14-6 because you didn't learn your lesson the first time, because Devin Hester is that dude when it comes to returning punts and kickoffs, all of the above. But, dude, man, it's rain was a factor, but this started, Stu, kind of a fumble fest, you may want to call
yeah.
it,
in the Super Bowl. I was getting ready to say, the next possession, the Colts fumble and give it back to the Bears, thanks to Brian Urlacher and a big listen, the announcers gave it to Brian Urlacher. They gave him credit. When I rewatched it, I thought it was more of a missed handoff. I thought it was more of a bad botched handoff between yeah. Peyton and Joseph Addai, but they gave the fumble to Brian Urlacher. I was like, I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think it was a bad handoff between Peyton and Joseph Addai.
I'm right there with you. That was one of those. I think this was the one that did not get, he never had control of it. I think yeah. it was just like it slipped out of Peyton's hands. Wet jersey, wet arm, wet hand. It just very slippery football. And the fumble fest, I didn't remember how many fumbles were in the first quarter of this game. Yeah. Forgetting the fumbles in general, I want to say there were at least three, maybe four fumbles in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Actually, pretty high scoring first quarter, too, as for this game. But I'm like, man, fumble here, fumble there. And there was a point in this game, another time, where there are like back-to-back fumbles and back-to-back turnovers, one of the two. And I'm like, geez, man, this is not a good way to start the Super Bowl. Not just for the Bears scored, yes. Get the ball back, you fumble. Colts fumble. Figure it out. I understand it's the rain, but this isn't your first time playing the football. Also, Stu, so many thoughts in my head. I didn't realize this was Joseph Addai's rookie year.
Yeah, it was a rookie year. Yeah.
Dude, imagine you being a rookie, you go to the Colts, you're with Peyton Manning, and you go to play in the Super Bowl. That's got to be an exciting but also nerve-wracking thought to have.
I know it's a completely different different position, but Pat McAfee, I believe, was a rookie the year they went and played the
Saints.
He was. So, yeah, kind of. You talk about riding the coattails of an explosive offense.
Yeah.
But how do the Bears answer it? The Bloomington South alum, the Florida Gator alum, throws a touchdown to Musa Muhammad. I believe that's who it was. Walks into the end zone, scores, and all of a sudden the Bears are up 14-6 in favor of Chicago. And what an answer to go back on the other side after what you said, after what, you know, like we said, was kind of a fumble fest.
Dude, Musa Muhammad, that's how I'm bringing back memories. I think he was on the Panthers team a few years earlier.
Yeah.
That played in the Super Bowl. Yep. And I was like, geez, so many old names that I remember watching as a kid and love watching them play. But once again, Rex Grossman, one of those guys that I don't think it really gets the respect that he deserved back then. Wasn't an amazing quarterback, but he still made a play. And Musa Muhammad, once again, in a big moment, is making a play in the Super Bowl. And Stu, this is one of those moments that you hear the crowd, you hear it early in the game where it's heavy Chicago Bears, especially when Devin Hester scores that touchdown. When Musa Muhammad scores and they all yell and they get loud, I'm like, goodness. It's almost like Miami turning it into Chicago for one night, because it seemed like all of Chicago was down there in that stadium celebrating and rooting for the Chicago Bears in Super Bowl 41.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then you talk about it, it's 14-6 to end the first quarter. They scored at about the the 440 mark there in the first. So we head into the second quarter, and Colts are down 14-6. I think there were a couple more fumbles that happened before, and then we march down. The Colts kick it, and it's not, now it's 9-14. But I will say, I'm pretty sure, I know there was a botched extra point by Hunter Smith, but I'm also pretty sure Vinny missed a couple of field goals in this game that wound up being, that the score could have wound up being easily maybe 35-17 for the final score. But Vinny missed a couple of field goals, which was very different for him. This was his first year in Indianapolis. And what we had seen from Vinatieri before that was the guy who helped Tom Brady win three Super Bowls.
You know, for a second, I was thinking this was, I think it was Matt Stover was the kicker that I was thinking was on the Colts this year, but no, it was Vinatieri. I don't know if that was all the rain. Now, I could say, yes, that was all rain for why he missed it. I just don't know. But yeah, no, he did miss a kick. And I'm sitting here like, oh, like the emotions are coming back out. Like I'm watching it for the first time. Because I forget so much about what happened. But that missed kick, man, to go along with the fumble, to go along with the kick return that was returned for touchdown, to go along with Peyton Manning's interception. Things just weren't going the Colts' way early in this game. Yes, I know they scored. But, man, even that touchdown by Muhammad, it seemed like the Bears were still finding a way in a weird environment to stay above the Colts and to keep that lead.
Yeah, and then you look at it for the Indianapolis Colts, and this was a team that was very – had one of the most explosive offenses in all of football and really wound up, you know, being tested, in a sense, by one of the best defenses in all football. I want to go back a little bit because I did miss something that was very important. Leading up to that Musa Muhammad touchdown was a big, I believe, 52-yard run by Thomas Jones. And the reason that's important is heading into that into the playoffs, Jay, I don't know if you remember this, but heading into the playoffs, the Colts were the 32nd-ranked rush defense out of 32 teams. And headed into the playoffs, the first team they had to play was the Kansas City Chiefs. But the leading rusher at that point, Larry Johnson, and if you remember before that playoff game, Tony Dungy called his players soft in a sense, and the players took offense to it, and they wound up holding Larry Johnson below 100 yards. They did wind up becoming the league's number one defense throughout the playoffs, but the point still being that weakness that had bothered the Colts all game. When Thomas Jones breaks that 52-yarder, even though, like we said, we know how it ends, there's a part of you that says, oh, no, this is going to be the game changer.
Think about this, though, Steve. Think about going back to the regular season and how bad the rush defense was. The Colts didn't have Bob Sanders most of the season due to an injury. Bob Sanders comes back in the playoffs, and the defense leads the Colts the entire playoffs into the Super Bowl and winning it. And so, yes, there was that long run by Thomas Jones. I believe it was the Bears' longest run of the entire season, 52 yards. And you're sitting here like, man, can these things stop going wrong for the Colts? Literally, I'm getting emotional because I still have that fandom in me. We both host podcasts and we talk and analyze things. I don't think either one of us want to lose the fan inside of us, which is a big reason why we do what we do. But, Stu, man, that run, Thomas Jones, especially after Cedric Benson got popped in the first quarter by Bob Sanders.
Yeah, absolutely lit. You could hear the shot that the ball came out. And you see, the thing is, like, we're so far removed from a guy like Bob Sanders. You forget. And, like, I caught the tail end of Bob Sanders. Like, I caught the always injured Bob Sanders type of guy. So, like, I was never a Bob Sanders guy. But you forget how hard this guy hit. Like, he was like one of the Sean Taylor type of guys. He was one of those guys. And that shot that he laid on Cedric Benson that caused a fumble in the first quarter was a shot. And it sounded like a shotgun that went off.
Dude, I forgot how big Cedric Benson was as a running back.
Yeah.
And I forgot how hard Bob Sanders hit as a safety. But one thing Bob Sanders did going back into the first quarter now, he was at his normal safety depth. But then he creeps up, slides over a little bit, and then when he realizes that it's not a play action. It's a run to with Cedric Benson. He hits him in the hole. So at the snap of the ball, he's probably 8 yards off the line of scrimmage, at worst 10. Benson gets the ball. They hit each other literally at the line of scrimmage in the hole. That's the quickness. That's the way he's able to read and react so quickly. But also him being 5'8", with about 205, with biceps that were huge. Man, all of that went into the power and the punch that he brought when he hit you. Dog, that rush defense of the Colts was bad. But they turned up the heat and got a whole lot better in the playoffs. And it showed in that play against Cedric Benson, but not that long run by Thomas Jones.
Yeah, for sure. And so we fast forward a little bit, and there's a big third down, I believe, before we get to the score. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but there's a big third down, and it looks like Rex Grossman has Musa Muhammad again, and I believe he drops the football. After what was, I believe, a big hit or some kind of forced hit, he drops the football, 3 and out. The Colts get it. They go down, score, go up 15 to 14. It was at one point, it was 9 to 14. I did miss a field goal in there, but the Colts wind up getting it. So maybe I'm ahead of myself. I can't remember the exact current of events, but a big third down, because if Rex Grossman connects on that, Jay, and they keep that drive going, and maybe they go down and make it 17 to 6 or 9, or they go down the field and maybe they score a touchdown and score 21, we're probably talking about an entirely different game, because the momentum now is all for the Bears.
You're right there, man. There's so many things in this game. But Rex Grossman, he knew he had to do something a little bit different, maybe a little extra, as we call it today, to win this game because of how the Colts defense was playing in the playoffs. If it was just a regular old Colts defense, maybe, like, you could just do your regular old stuff from the regular season, but you can't. When you talk about that drop by Muhammad, I wonder how many times these receivers went to the sidelines and they were saying, hey, bro, take your gloves off. It's raining. It's not going to work. Yeah. They're like, no, I need it for padding. Bro, it ain't going to do nothing. It's going to hit your hands and go right through. They're slick because of the rain. And I want to say, oh, I forget who it was. Somebody on the Colts dropped the ball. They had gloves. And I want to say,
it was Hank, or the third string tight end.
London Fletcher. Not London Fletcher.
Yeah, it was Fletcher. No, that's the linebacker that played for the...
Yeah, London Fletcher's a linebacker. I think this guy's name is still Fletcher. Brian Fletcher.
Yeah, Fletcher.
I thought it was Hank Baskett, too. Yeah. And then I realized, no, it was Fletcher, not Baskett. I was like, oh, okay, I want to make sure that I'm not talking about the same person. But no, man, that drop on Muhammad, take the gloves off, bro. It's raining. It's not going to help you at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts, because that's the thing that gets me, is you see all these quarterbacks kind of talking about, you know, the different things. Like, you always see quarterbacks who play outside in snow or whatever. Let me put some gloves on. And maybe they're different types of gloves. But as a guy, let me say this very clearly for everybody in the back to hear. I did not play even college football. I played high school football. And when you play, I always remember how difficult it was to catch in the rain with the gloves. So every time someone puts the gloves on, I'm like, what are we doing here?
Right?
But yeah. Yeah, a big drop by Musa Muhammad gives the Colts the ball. And the next thing you know, it's a close game, Jay. The Colts have the lead. It's 15-14, and things seem to be going the Colts' way.
That's what you need. You had to kind of just literally – I'm not trying to say this for to make a point, but literally you have to weather the storm. You have to find a way to slow things down, overcome some obstacles, overcome some adversities, and then find a way to get the lead at some point in time. And that's huge, man. We talk about, I think Bethea almost had an interception early, yeah. It was in the first quarter. I think he was actually in the area when Muhammad caught that touchdown pass. A lot of things going the opposite way for the Colts, but you weather the storm and get the lead. And then from there, they don't relinquish it the rest of the game.
Yeah. So the Colts do make the extra point off of what was a Dominic Rhodes touchdown to make it actually 16-14 with about 6:09 left in the second quarter, Jay. And we go down. That's when the Brian Fletcher fumble happens right after that play. And then you go in, and it's a fumbled snap by Rex Grossman. and Raheem Brock falls on it and recovers the football. What a play by a name I haven't heard in a long time, Raheem Brock, to be there to fall on top of the play and give the football back to the Colts.
Dude, talk about Raheem Brock. Early in this game, I think Booker McFarland had a sack
or a tackle
for a loss. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I had forgot he played for the Colts. That's and he went on the Colts for very long. Like,
no, I think it was like 2 seasons.
He was a good football player. Like, analyzing football, people love him or hate him. There's really no in between with Booker McFarland. I'm more on the side where I don't say I love there is an in between. I wouldn't say I love him as an analyst. But he does say a lot of good things that I can't agree with and can't get down with. But dog, Raheem Brock was an undersized defensive tackle. Robert Mathis was an undersized defensive end. Booger McFarland was a booger on the field. I don't know another way to call him, but a booger on the field. And you had Freeney. That defensive line played off each other so, so well. And you could see them in the game feeding off each other's energy. Cato June gets a tackle. Garrett Brackett gets a tackle. What do you find? Matt Tissafrini are right back a few plays later in the backfield, making things hard for Rex Grossman. That's a blast from the past and a name that I forgot about in Raheem Brock. But, man, the Colts D-line, not the prototypical size for a defensive line, but they are really, really good.
How did the Colts answer off that fumble, Jay? An Adam Vinatieri missed 36-yard field goal to keep it 16-14 at the half as it went wide right. Again, we talked about the missed kicks for Adam Vinatieri in this game, something that was very uncharacteristic for a guy who had seemingly had ice water in his veins leading up to this point. Now, for us Colts fans, fast forward 10 years later, 12 years later, we know how it ended with Adam Vinatieri, cost the Colts maybe the playoffs the year Phillip Rivers was there. But what I'm getting at is, at this point, this was the Adam Vinatieri who, I believe, Jay, it was this Super Bowl run and not the one versus the Saints where he had to kick 4 field goals just for them to beat the Baltimore Ravens to advance into the playoffs.
So many memories, Stu. I forgot about that game. And I remember watching that game, and I'm getting frustrated but also happy that the Colts have a kicker that doesn't flop in a big moment, because I remember Mike Vanderjack.
Yeah. And then he gets liquored up and runs his mouth.
And Peyton Manning at the Pro Bowl says, we got the idiot kicker, and he's nowhere to be. I don't know where. I haven't seen Vanderjack since that moment. I don't
he was
really
a cowboy
know.
Cowboy after that.
I didn't know where he went. I'm being for real. I didn't know if he was in the league or not.
But yeah, so, I mean, we're coming off a guy who, even for the Colts, had won them a game to get them to this point, Jay. He kicks 4 field goals in that game to win 12-9, I believe, against the Baltimore Ravens. And, Jay, he comes into the Super Bowl and pretty much lays an egg. Isn't very good. Isn't the Adam Vinatieri that we know, and maybe we can credit the weather for that, but Adam Vinatieri just was not good in this game.
No, man. Weather, the moment, the stage, Florida, whatever you want to call it, it's a kicker not getting the job done. Same thing for Peyton Manning. You can say the weather. You can say he's outside. You can say the Bears defense, which was good. You can say the brains and the smarts of Brian Urlacher. Whatever you want to say to describe what may have been causing it, he didn't get the job done. That's one of the weird things about kickers. We can look at your percentage and say, okay, you go out of 100 kicks, you're going to make 92. Okay, great. Another guy out of 100 kicks will make 92, but those are practice kicks. In the game, he's 95 of 100. Now, what changes? I don't know. Yeah. But he makes 3 more in the game that he does in practice. And so sometimes there are things that just get in the head of a kicker, that just get in the head or the body of a quarterback in Peyton Manning. I don't know exactly what it is. This was not as fine as out and kicking the footballs.
No. And so we go to halftime. Colts up 16-14. We come out. Colts get a big return by Wilkins. They get down inside. It becomes a 29-yard field goal, which Adam Vinatieri goes on to kick and make it 19-14. So what happens? The 14-yard run on the next possession for the Bears by Thomas Jones. Bears look like they're getting it going. And then Musa Muhammad catches a 9-yarder, Jay. but it is Rex Grossman who gets sacked. This is a sack by Anthony McFarland you're talking about. He gets sacked by Anthony McFarland to bring up third down, and right when it's third down, Jay, he fumbles the snap, and the Bears have to punt.
I love it. But it goes into one of the moves Bill Polian made back then was to bring Booker McFarland in as a free agent.
Yeah.
And I think Colts fans, you can gripe and complain about Ryan Grigson. You can gripe and complain about Chris Ballard. You may love Chris Ballard, whatever it is. They're not Bill Polian. Bill Polian, some of the moves that he made to bring in an undersized Robert Mathis at defensive end and to not force him to play middle linebacker, but to keep him on the line where he was, where he excelled at, that's a phenomenal move.
And an undersized Gary Brackett, too.
Yes.
Like, you have to remember, Gary Brackett was undersized for a middle linebacker.
Yes. Yeah, not only him, who else? Being able to get a kid from LSU and Joseph Addai, knowing that you Peyton Manning basically had Marshall Faulk and Edgerrin James as his running backs. All of a sudden, Joseph Addai is neither one of those two guys. Those two guys are Hall of Famers. But Joseph Addai got the job done. I was not a Joseph Addai fan in the moment. Of course, I loved number 32, Edgerrin James, because he was the running back when I became – well, no, I was a fan when Marshall Faulk was there too. But I – when Peyton and Edgerrin James and Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne kind of over – kind of took over the city – that's when my fandom got strong, which went into an impact in how I viewed Joseph Addai. But, bro, Joseph Addai was a good, good, solid running back. And to draft him and to realize he's ready for this moment right now as a rookie, another good move by Bill Polian.
Yeah, and not only that, Jay, but to think about Bill Polian was already a Hall of Famer for what he did with the Buffalo Bills before
yes.
this.
Yes.
He gets Jim Kelly and all those guys, and he goes to four straight Super Bowls. Granted, he loses them all, but to go to four straight, or at least four and however many years it was, I believe it was four straight, to be able to do what he did in Buffalo and then do the same thing in Indianapolis. And for so many years, you had a quarterback in Peyton who wins an MVP. You have Marvin Harrison. You have Reggie Wayne. You're close, but there's that – There's the Joker every time in Tom Brady. Batman finally beats the Joker. We get to the Super Bowl. And to make moves and to not be afraid to make moves, I think, has been the biggest criticism I've had, you've had, other Colts fans have had with the current regime at the GM. But to show that it's okay to take risks, as long as they're not gambles, but to take risks, because sometimes the risks equal Super Bowls.
That's it. The Chiefs, who else is it? The Patriots, and I don't like talking about them.
The 49ers right now with Brock Purdy. You know how many times they could have said goodbye to a seventh-round pick?
Risk-taking is not bad. It's what we do in life. It's a part of our everyday being. We take risk.
When you gamble, it becomes an issue.
Exactly. And I wish, Colts fans will be listening to this. I hope that somebody that down at West 56th Street listens to it too and realizes, hey, we got to take more risks, because if we don't, our season might end once again missing the playoffs, or if here wondering how do we move on, take a risk or two or three. It's not a bad thing. But you also got to make sure your evaluation of the players is spot on too, which goes back to Bill Polian. The way he analyzed and evaluated the players was always on point.
Yeah, it sure was. And so the third quarter of that Super Bowl ends with a pair of field goals, one by Evan Terry and one by the Chicago Bears, Robbie Gould, to end it 22-17. And then, Jay, the final score of the game came from a 52-yard interception, I believe, by Calvin Hayden to score a touchdown. It was a pick six, and that's how the game ends. And or not essentially how it ends. There are a few more possessions after that. It advances on. But the Colts wind up winning 29-17, and the Colts go on to claim victory. But, Jay, to kind of talk about this game as a whole, if you were not Colts fans or a Bears fan, what a terrible Super Bowl to watch, just to be flat-out honest with you.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh. So I don't know about you. I couldn't find it on YouTube the entire game.
I couldn't either.
Okay. Which is pretty weird because I think almost every Super Bowl, at least
is on every one of them. You go on to YouTube, you type in full Super Bowls, there's a playlist. And it literally goes 40, skips 41, goes to 42, and you're like, what in the world's going on?
That just goes to show how bad this game was. It's literally one of the worst Super Bowls that I have seen as a football game in my life. And I remember the Ravens and Giants. Remember that Super Bowl? Yeah. I remember the
Seahawks Broncos years later.
Seahawks Broncos. I remember, oh gosh.
That Rams Patriots one sucked too.
The Buccaneers smoked the Raiders, I think it was.
And then Jared Goff and the Patriots, that one sucked.
Dude, there's been some bad Super Bowls. This one, of all the ones we just discussed, this might be at the bottom of the list. You have a high-power Colts offense that can't do anything in the rain. You have Dominic Rhodes, who does phenomenal things as a backup running back. Joseph Addai is more of a threat running the passing and receiving game than running the ball. The Colts defense is great at forcing fumbles, and it got two interceptions. Bob Sanders had one INT as well. The quarterback play wasn't great. You had an injury to Cedric Benson. Thomas Jones does phenomenal. You take Musa Muhammad off the game. Really, if you take Joseph Addai off the game for in the receiving game, the receivers didn't really do much. Like, I had the numbers here, and I wasn't going to bring this up, Stu, but at least in the receiving game, Addai had 10 catches for 66 yards. Reggie Wayne had 2 for 61 and a TD. Marvin Harrison, 5 for 59. Dallas Clark, 4 for 36. Fletcher, 2 catches. Rhodes, 1, and UTEC, 1. And I'm sitting here like,
and Peyton Fletcher fumbled one of those.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not what you would expect from a Colts offense. I understand the weather. I understand all of that. But in the biggest game of the year, this isn't what you expect. And I also wonder how the players view that bye week in between the conference championship round of the playoffs and the Super Bowl. I wonder if this game would have been played better if there wasn't a bye week, an off week. Because I truly wonder if that's one thing that kind of hurt Peyton Manning. We remember Peyton Manning, if he got a bye week going into the playoffs, sometimes it wasn't the best thing, the best formula for him to be successful in the playoffs. And I wonder, for both teams, not just the Colts, if the game was played a week after the conference championship games were played, if it would have been an overall better game. And my thought is probably it would be.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the weather had something to do with it, all those types of things. But it really set into the motion of Peyton didn't play well. Even after that, Peyton didn't play well outside. I think, in my opinion, Jay, I don't think that changed until he went to Denver. And he showed us in Denver, you know, in 2012 and 2013, 2014, 2015, that he can play in that kind of weather. It didn't matter that, you know, we really believed he could play outdoors. And the reason for that was, even though he won the Super Bowl, he didn't play great. And it wasn't the best Peyton Manning that we had seen. And, you know, you fast forward a little bit, maybe things change, maybe fate changes, maybe history changes. But if history stays the same, if a couple things go to Bears' way, Jay, Peyton winds up 0-2 in Super Bowls.
Dude, think about this game. If he's 0-2 in Super Bowls, and think about – now, you mentioned the Broncos and him playing better outside. That was a need. Like, that was something he had to do because they don't have an indoor stadium. If he played that way out there, he wouldn't have been in Denver for 4 years. I guarantee you that.
Yeah.
I know he's Peyton Manning. I know his name. I know what it means to football, and I understand all of that. He wouldn't have been out there for 4 years because I don't believe they would have put up with Peyton Manning playing down. One thing Peyton Manning did in Denver, which I still don't understand really how he did it, he couldn't really throw the ball at the end of his career at all.
And I don't think 2015, I don't think he could throw it 15 yards, to be honest with you.
No. And still found a way to go out on top lifting the Lombardi Trophy. That's one of the most amazing feats in his career, is that, hey, I can't throw the ball, but I can still lead an offense to the biggest game of the year.
And I'm pretty sure that final year in the AFC Championship game, if they don't – I'm pretty sure there were a couple of situations. I don't think they wound up using it, but I think there were a couple situations where they thought they were going to throw deep, and Brock Osweiler was on the sideline warming up, ready to throw the ball 70 yards if he had to, because Peyton couldn't get it more than 15.
Peyton could never throw a deep. That was never like that was never, ever, ever his game. And some of you might be like, well, Jay, he threw that ball up Reggie Wayne. That was what, 40 yards in the air, 35 yards in the air, and Reggie Wayne did the rest. He was also wide open. So if Reggie Wayne dropped the ball, that was on Reggie Wayne. If the ball was short or long, that was on Peyton Manning. But he had so much room. It would have been an atrocious throw to make that not be a complete pass. But you're right, man. Like, it's still one of the weirdest things about Peyton Manning's career, just that he was never really the best quarterback outside.
Yeah, and I want to say this. I've heard people talk about it since and this type of stuff about how that was the most important game in Peyton's career. And I actually happen to disagree.
Okay.
I think the AFC Championship game the week before, leading up, or 2 weeks before, leading up to that, versus the New England Patriots, you talk about, we had talked about it. Peyton was that guy who didn't win in big moments. Everybody knows Peyton now as, you know, it was always that thing, Jay, that we heard, right, was give Peyton the football in the final minutes and you'll succeed. But then I have memories of Michael Burner Turner for the San Diego Chargers ruining our lives in the playoffs because Peyton couldn't get the job done in the final minutes and he had the football. I remember several times with Indianapolis where against the Patriots, where it came down to Peyton having the ball last and it got picked off or he couldn't do something with it. And so for me, the most important game in Peyton's career was that AFC Championship game because it got him to the Super Bowl, yes, but this was finally the point where it changed for the Colts, where they were no longer the little brother. They came in, they had a puncher's chance, they knocked out the champion, and they had a shot now to show that we are as good as we say we are, because up to that point, congratulations, you won 4 MVPs, Peyton, but Tom still had the 3 Super Bowls on you, and this rivalry was kind of lopsided up to this point, and it really changed the course of Peyton's career and how we viewed him and how we viewed the Colts and how the Colts were viewed from that point on.
You know, I'm with you. I wouldn't say that was the most important game of Peyton's career. I know we got it checked the box in his resume.
Are you talking about the finally Super Bowl, got a Super Bowl championship?
The Super Bowl checked the box. I do think the AFC Championship was a bigger game because even for the city, I know Peyton Manning was not the city. The city has thousands of people in it, but that game had so much weight on it. We had seen them play the Patriots in New England and in Indianapolis, regular season, postseason, and the Patriots really had the Colts number. And Peyton Manning knew that. And so he knew he had to do something late that game, but also the defense had to do something to help the Colts win the game. I do believe that was the biggest game of his career, at least to that point in time. Even now, looking back on it, I don't think it was a bigger game. It was one of those weird things, man. Like, we see it in sports where there's a guy. The Pacers couldn't get past LeBron James for anything. One person, LeBron goes to the Heat. You play LeBron in the playoffs, can't get past him. LeBron goes to the Cleveland Cavaliers. You can't get past him. You see guys out there where certain players, certain teams can't just get past a player or a team. And I think getting past the Patriots in the AFC Championship was and is the biggest game of his career, because after that, what do you see a couple years later? Colts back in his Super Bowl. They got the monkey off your back, AFC Championship game. You win in really bad situations, really bad conditions in Miami for the Super Bowl, but also you have belief. One, you can get there to the Super Bowl. Two, you can do it again. But also, you figured out how to get your enemy, your biggest enemy, down and to beat them in that game in that way. This game was so important. Then the Colts franchise in general, you take that game away, the Colts, we don't have the expectations that we have for the Colts right now.
Yeah, and let me say this too. Maybe things change a little bit. I know when Peyton got cut in 2012 and we drafted Andrew Luck, there was a lot of hate around that move. And rightfully so, you know, whatever. Yeah, it happens. However it went down, it went down.
Yeah.
Maybe the maybe we don't hate it so much if Peyton's 0 for 2 in Super Bowls. Maybe we don't hate it so much if we never get over Tom Brady. Because, yes, while you've done so much for us, sometimes as fans, and Jay, you and I are part of this Colts fan base, we know how insane and crazy these people are.
Yeah, you're right.
You're looked at in a different light if he doesn't win that AFC Championship game, if he doesn't win that Super Bowl. Maybe it is, hey, let's bring in Andrew Luck and let's welcome this new future. Thank you, Peyton, for everything you did. But there's probably not a statue outside of Lucas Oil right now. And Lucas Oil, I'll say this, Jay, is known, as many people say, as the house that Peyton built. Maybe we don't get Lucas Oil as soon as we do 2 years later after this in 2008 if the Colts don't win this Super Bowl.
No, I'm right there with you, man. That's one of those things. When you think about Peyton Manning, they had to get a new stadium in Indianapolis, and I don't know if that was something that was in the works so they could potentially host a Super Bowl. They weren't going to do it with the RCA Dome. Not at that point in the career of the time period of the NFL. They were not. I've been to the RCA Dome numerous times. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I understand that, like, it was new age and it was great in the 80s and all of those things. There were some new age marks that were missing from the RCA Dome, and you have this now beautiful brick stadium that still looks very, it still looks brand new, still very, very modern on the
outside.
And
maybe I'm biased, best stadium in the league, but maybe I'm biased.
Hey, I don't mind that. I would definitely take that over Allegiant Stadium, which looks very, 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 very big.
Or that Nissan Stadium, God forsaken that place.
You know you want to. You know you like it. I know deep down you like it.
I like how run down it is, and the fact that the concrete on the steps is snapping off after every bit. I love that part.
Oh, you're pissing people off today. I enjoy this. Keep going. No, I do love Lucas Oil, man. It's one of those things that even today when I go there, I'm like, wow, this is where the Colts play. This is where the state high school football championship is played. It's amazing. I do love Lucas Oil Stadium, and I liked it when it first came out. I love it now, which is saying a lot. Because I'm a tough critic, as you know.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, just to kind of think about it, Jay. Like, you know, I know Chris LeBron over at the Off Ball Network's doing a What If series. We could honestly do one right now. We could do a whole another episode of What If Peyton Never Wins the Super Bowl, because I think so much changes within the city, within the town, within this state if Peyton doesn't win the. You know, Super Bowl, Jay, you lived in the state of Indiana that I've lived in. We both know this. This is even to this day, it's a basketball state.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Indiana Hoosiers, God, everyone else in this state. I'm just going to be flat out with you. The Colts are up there somewhere, but they're like fourth or fifth on the list.
Yeah.
It's the Hoosiers, high school basketball, it goes down the list. Like, basketball is king in the state. I do think Peyton and the Colts, though, in 2006 with that Super Bowl, made a tiny indent and have driven themselves and put Colts football near the top up there. But that doesn't happen if they don't bring home that Lombardi trophy.
No. Think about it. For people that don't know, in the state of Indiana, it is basketball that's always going to be number one. I don't see that ever changing from IU and the Hoosiers to Purdue, to the Pacers, to Indiana high school basketball, both boys and girls. That's always going to be the top. You got the Indy 500, which over the past 5 years has gotten a lot more attention, I do believe.
But back then it was really popular early 2000s.
Yes, it was. Extremely popular. And Peyton Manning and Reggie Wayne and Edgerrin James and all of these phenomenal football players put football on the map inside the state, and people realized it's not just basketball. It's not just the Indy 500. It's also Colts football. And the expectations for this franchise went through the roof because of Peyton Manning. And if Peyton Manning got so close, and all of a sudden couldn't get there, people would view him like they view Reggie Miller. really good player. Great player, could win you some games, could beat your rival, do all those things.
Hall of Famer.
But Hall of Famer, but could win the big one. That's exactly how they would view Peyton Manning. However, that's not how we view him. It was 1-1 in Super Bowls in Indianapolis, 1-1 with the Broncos. And there are a lot of Colts fans, too, that still view those Broncos Super Bowl wins as Colts wins because Peyton Manning was on the team. I'm not one of them, but there are people out there that do that.
Yeah. And just so you don't, just for those of you who don't live in Indiana, you don't understand, like in Texas, like high school football is king. And like, I'm telling you, like in small town Indiana, maybe not some of the bigger cities like Indianapolis and some of those, but I do know in small town Indiana, if it's game day and you need something from the grocery store, good luck. Because the entire town shut down because they're all at the game watching their local high schools play. Jay, I had a great time,
man,
running through this memory of the only Super Bowl I've ever seen the Colts win. And hopefully that streak ends relatively soon. I guess we'll see. But it was fun, Jay. A lot of memories were brought back. A lot of players I hadn't thought about or talked about in a long, long time, Jay, and it was a fun one to go back down memory lane for this one.
Dude, I loved it. I would do it again and again and again. Hit me up. Let me know. Get the game. We'll make it. We'll figure out how to rewatch it and do this thing. No, I love this stuff. I've done them on my pod before. I'm going to do them again here soon. And I love it, man. Talk about Peyton Manning. Talk about so many Colts football players that we watched and grew up loving, seeing them play. Brought back so many memories, and it kind of ignited a fire in me to want another Super Bowl ring in the hands of Colts football players, which ultimately means they're world champions. I want that so bad, so bad. I don't know if it's going to happen within the next 3 to 5 years, too, but I would love for it to happen, though.
Me too. Hey, I told my wife is fully prepared. She knows. I said, listen, I consider myself financially responsible. I get it. But I said, if the Colts win the Super Bowl, just letting you know, when those ads pop up and say, hey, Colts fans, your team just won the Super Bowl, I'm buying the commemorative hats, DVD, the football, 8 shirts, sweatpants if they sell it, whatever statue they have, I'm buying it all. Because it's been, what, 18 years since I saw one? Saw us win one? Who knows? We could be Cubs fans, and it could be another 85, 100-something years before we see one. So I'm just saying, if we win one, and I'm alive to see it, be prepared for us to rack up a big bill, because I'm buying it all.
Hey, bro, I'm right there with you. I ain't gonna buy everything, but I'm definitely going to buy a hat. I'm buying a shirt. This just reminded me that the shirt that I got when the Colts won the Super Bowl way back then, it was one that I got from Marsh. They printed off the front page of the Indianapolis Star, and I actually saw it at a beat Buffalo Wild Wings recently, and they put that on a white T-shirt. So it was a front page Colts win. I forget who was on the front. And I was like, okay, that was the shirt that I had. Didn't buy the shirt off the internet, which is weird because I had one a few years earlier when the Texas Longhorns beat USC to win the college football national championship, BCS or whatever it was back then. I didn't do it for the Colts. Don't ask me why. It doesn't make any sense, but I did get that one from Marsh, the supermarket. That's so weird that that's not a thing anymore, that they just shut down.
I know. I have one, the same one that Peyton's wearing in that picture above my bed. A couple things I have on my desk, actually, is this commemorative football, as you see it, Jay, that has the Super Bowl mark on it, has the score. It's an autographed one. I have a plaque hanging up, and then I have our boy Peyton Manning with the Super Bowl logo at the bottom. Just some things I had on my desk here as I was going through Super Bowl memories, and kind of takes me back.
Dude, I have a hat in my closet, which is to my left, and it is it's Super Bowl 41 hat. I don't know if I got a player's name stitched on that or not in an autograph form, because I used to go to Lids to get hats all the time. They're like, hey, bro, do you want his signature on your hat? I'm like, yeah. How do I get it? Oh, it's in our database. We'll just tap it in here, stitch it on. You'll leave with it here in a few minutes. I don't know if I got one on that hat or not, but I do have that hat. I actually got Pat McAfee's name stitched on one of my hats. I got, who was it? Oh gosh. Was it Vontae Davis? The kid, the guy that was at the.
Yeah. Or no, Vontae was his brother that played for the 49ers.
Who was
it?
The one that quit on the Bills at halftime?
Yeah, it was Vontae. You're right. It's Vontae
okay.
Davis. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I had him on one, and I feel bad now. I don't really wear it because I'm like, who is that guy? He's known for retiring at halftime.
Yeah. Hey, Jay.
That's so funny. That's a funny story.
Big thank you, man, for doing this. The next one I want to do won't be as fun for us, but I want to go back and rewatch the. This one I know is on there, the Colts and Saints Super Bowl. The full game is on YouTube. I have seen it. Kind of just kind of go through and look back and go down that bad part of our memory, but to kind of look back and see where maybe things went wrong for the Colts and where they could have maybe gone differently and talk about the what-ifs in that situation as well.
All you got to do is let me know when, Stu, and I'll be there.
All right, man. Hey, before you go, let people know where they can find you, what you're working on, all that cool stuff, because I enjoyed this episode, man.
I enjoyed it, too. You guys can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter, at JSteven07. You can check out the Jay Stevens podcast coming out once a week. It is back. Had a few months off, but, buddy, there's so much stuff to talk about in sports. We're going to do it all on the Jay Stevens podcast. Also, I'm going to do something new, Stu. Last segment of every show is going to have a local flavor. And so it could be sports media. It could be the Colts. It could be the Pacers. It could be 500. Whatever it is, we're going to have a local flavor with that on the last segment of every Jay Stevens podcast episode. But then also, daily, every Monday through Friday, the Locked On Buckeyes podcast, covering the Ohio State Buckeye football team mainly. And trust me, if you want the truth and reality about Ryan Day and the Buckeye football program, check out Locked On Buckeyes every Monday through Friday. I will give you the truth every single day.
And if he doesn't, his guest, Jeff Hunt, will. Let me tell you that.
hey, Jeff and Mo bring the heat every time.
Hey, speaking of Jeff, hey, for those of you listening, after this episode, again, it's the Super Bowl week. We're going to have a preview. I'm not sure who's going to be on yet. But we'll have a preview of the Super Bowl between the 49ers and the Chiefs. And then me and Jeff are doing a draft of one-hit wonders for the Super Bowl. So make sure you Super Bowl is passed, so make sure you stay tuned for that one, because that should be a fun one. Kind of like we did our Christmas movie draft, but it will be Super Bowl one-hit wonders. Make sure you stay tuned for that. That will come out later this week as well. A lot of stuff. I'm going hard for Super Bowl Sunday. It's like, for me, next to draft day, it's Christmas all over again. So big thank you to Jay Stevens. Big thank you to all y'all listening at home. Have a good day, good night, good afternoon, whatever it is. You have a good one. We will see you next week.